friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the December 9th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's kick off with African men's football. We're exactly 1 month away to the continent's premier tournament, the Africa Cup of Nations in Cameroon. The indomitable Lions of Cameroon, five-time African champions, will host the Stallions of Burkina Faso, the 2013 Nations Cup runners-up, in the opening match on January 9th in Yaoundé. The Confederation of African Football, CAF, this week dismissed rumors that the competition could be moved from Cameroon because of the spread of the Omicron coronavirus variant. The Super Eagles of Nigeria, three-time African champions, will begin their Nations Cup campaign with a tough opponent. They take on the Pharaohs of Egypt, winners of a record 7 African titles, on January 11th in Garoua, Cameroon. To try and evaluate the Nations Cup chances of the Super Eagles, Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with a top member of the Nigeria Football Supporters Club South Africa chapter, Ikos Akpokabayan.
Yes, Nigeria is in the same group with Egypt, Sudan, and Guinea-Bissau. You know, this is it's quite a tough group because of Egypt. And, you know, for every final tournament, the first game is very important. The first game is very crucial. It allows, the outcome of the first game allows and prepares the squad and the team on how to deal with the forthcoming games. And it's always important to at least win or draw the first game. And like we know, that first game is with Egypt. But you know, the times have changed and we have COVID now. So what is important is for the players to be in the camp as early as possible, to be settled. You know, most of our top players are playing in Europe. And right now in Europe, it's winter, it's cold. So the earlier they come back to be as a team in the camp in a warm environment will give them a huge advantage to begin to prepare for the first game against Egypt.
You witnessed Nigeria's victory in the 2013 AFCON tournament held in South Africa. Do you think Nigeria can repeat same feat in Cameroon in 2022?
Yes, I remember in 2013 when Nigeria won the finals here in South Africa. A lot of people and supporters were not thinking Nigeria was going to win or even reach the finals. And I can remember that day quite well. It was very joyous. And yes, of course, I think Super Eagles can repeat the same fate. Every competition the Super Eagles participate in, they are capable to win. And if you look at their ranking, it has been very consistent in the last few years. And, you know, we having one of the top midfielders now in Africa performing. When you look at the Wilfred Ndidi, he's performing very well. And our striker like Osimhen, they're doing very well. So there's no reason why, with a stable coach, a stable team, that the Super Eagles cannot win. I think they can win, and I wish them to win. And I also wish them all the best to win this competition.
What has been the impression of Nigerians resident in South Africa about the Super Eagles' performance in recent times?
Yeah, Nigerians in South Africa, we have been very patriotic to the Super Eagles. We knew it was, you know, during the qualification recently for the World Cup was, you know, it was very tight. We were very anxious. But we think the performance can improve. We know because of the disruption, difficulties in traveling, assembling players have affected the team. And we know that when players come for international breaks, it's usually different than a competition. And so in recent times, we've had a double feeling in terms of the Super Eagles in their performance. You know, sometimes we're so impressed and the next time it's a little bit flat. You know, but we're glad that we qualified for the World Cup, you know, winning the last game. And, you know, it's been difficult, but we're quite optimistic on the performance to improve, especially in this coming tournament of the AFCON in January.
That's Ekos Akpokobayan, a top member of the Nigeria Football Supporters Club South Africa chapter. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Sporty greetings. This is Ekos Akpokobayan, member of the Nigerian Football Supporters Club in South Africa. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
The Black Stars of Ghana are grouped with Morocco, Comoros, and Gabon at the Nations Cup in Cameroon. The Black Stars are four-time African champions. They lifted the trophy in 1963, 1965, 1978, and 1982. The now 79-year-old Amusa Badamosi was a striker on that 1965 champion team. Amusa has been described as the greatest player ever from the northern region of Ghana. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, Yawafusu Larbi tells us more. Sporty greetings, Yao!
Sporty greetings, Sunny. The 60s were Ghana's glory years in football. The organization of the Black Stars, trophy wins, that 13-0 win against Kenya in Nairobi, and many more. Known wildly as the Brazilians of African football, Ghana was the ideal African football country. All of it orchestrated by a group whose names have been etched into the very fabric of football in this country. Wilberforce Mfum, Agrifin, Reverend Osekofi and Kofi Pare are names that ring bells. But there is one man among that crop whose name is criminally missing, his legacy buried in the sands of time. In 1965, he was flown alone by the then president, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, to Tunis to play in the Africa Cup of Nations after he missed the flight due to personal reasons. The man, Amusa Badamosi.
He was a genius. I saw him. People who don't see, who have not seen Amusa will never agree on what I'm saying. We produced great players like Abedi, Gago, Hamza Mohamed and others, Sheila and a lot of us. Eh? But Amusa was unique. If you see Amusa playing, you will like it. You admire him. He was an all-round player. Amusa was a good shooter. He was a good dribbler and a playmaker. Amusa is the greatest player the North has ever produced. The Black Star went to Brazil. How was Amusa received in Brazil? Amusa in his hotel finds it difficult to come out because the mob was always waiting for Amusa. Amusa, you see him, was the real Pele. If you talk of Ghana Pele, it's Amusa. But the mercy. I played alongside Abedi. Abedi is his time. He was lucky. He was exposed to the world. There were TVs. There were cameras all over the place. People were seeing him live. So the people liked Abedi. He has the charisma. But he cannot compare himself to Amusa Badamosi I saw.
In 1969, when Santos of Brazil took on Accra Hearts of Oak at the Accra Sports Stadium, Amusa Badamosi was the star man for Hearts of Oak. He scored in that game that ended 2-2. And after the game, he had a discussion with Pele, a discussion that went really, really well. Pele loved the man. These days, he is back where it all started in Bimbila, in his humble beginnings, and in this house, here in the northern region. There are moments in every player's career that is noted as the most important. And for Badamosi, it was that game against Brazilian powerhouse Santos in Accra. The photo of him handing over a smock to the legendary Pele has become one of the most iconic yet unknown Ghanaian football photos. Amusa has great memories from that day.
Well, one, even, for instance, meeting Pele of Brazil. was one of those. Because I had that name, Peletu, before they came to Ghana to play. So it was quite interesting. But unfortunately to me, their goalkeeper wasn't all that good. Okay. Because the sort of goal I scored in, he shouldn't have allowed me to score that sort of a goal. Right. Pele was Pele. And I must say, Ghana's Pele was also... Ghana's Pele. See, he was great.
At Hartsevolk, Amusa was the outright star. He started his career in Tamale, but it was at several football meets that officials from Hartsevolk saw him and expressed interest. An official from the club visited his home in Bimbila to convince his parents to choose the capital club. Before then, he had played one game for Nkrumah's team, the Real Republicans.
Black Stars were to play Real Madrid. It was 62. So he brought me and George Alasa to watch that match in Accra. Then after that, they brought me to Republicans. I didn't like Accra. Okay. At that, because I was enjoying everything in Tabari. Right. So I played for them against Azakes in a league match. And I was staying at the director's house in Osun. I was not used to Accra.
The Hartsevolk Kotoko rivalry did not just start. There's an age-old bad blood between the two clubs. Gbadamosi moved to Kumasi Asante Kotoko in 1971 and got a fair share of antagonism from the Hearts faithful.
I went to Kotoko.
How did the Hartsevolk fans take it at the time?
I didn't even tell them I was going anywhere. So before they heard about what, I was in Kumasi. It was after Olympics, when they came to play Olympics in Accra. Because I left us, I didn't follow them. I know our supporters very well. So I was in Kumasi when they came and played the Olympics.
Amusa was a people's person. He believed in where he hailed from, his heritage. The skills he performed on the pitch were exceptional. He was a gifted player. He was one of those players many looked forward to seeing on match days. His time with the national team, though, barely bore fruits of his quality. In 1968, at the Summer Olympic Games in Mexico City, a tournament he believes Ghana should have performed way better in, he was one of the most important players in the team. There was him, Jones Atukwefio, Sami Sampene, Malik Jabir, Ibrahim Sunday, Johnny Shen, and the mystical Robert Mensah. That team was eliminated in the group stages after facing Israel, El Salvador, and Hungary. But Gbadamosi believes they could have done better.
Some players were so jealous about me that they got angry.
From what you're saying, it was just some infighting in the team that led to that.
Oh, yes. If some of those players who are still alive will talk the truth.
Amusa lives in Bimbila now, 147 kilometers from the northern region's capital, Tamale. This is where his rise to stardom in the 60s and 70s started, but not in comfortable conditions. He admits that this is a far cry from where he was three decades ago. Now living a very simple life, losing his eyesight by the day, Amusa wants a proper structure at the Professional Footballers Association of Ghana for retired footballers. He lived his football life to the fullest, but in the face of all the challenges now, he still has the wherewithal to crack a smile. If anyone asks of football legends from here, the list is long enough, but always remember the man from Bimbila, Amusa Gbadamosi. From Bimbila, in Ghana's northern region, this is Yao Fusilabi for the Sunny Side of Sports.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA. VOA's Newsmaker Interview Program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Thanks, Carol. Carol mentioned Press Conference USA's Facebook and Twitter accounts. Well, I encourage our Sunny Side of Sports listeners to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. China has condemned Australia's diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Winter Olympics as political posturing. China's treatment of its Uyghur minority spurred Australia's decision, which followed a similar U.S. move. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Australia's boycott of the Winter Games in China includes politicians and diplomats. It comes as friction between the two countries intensifies over human rights, trade, and allegations of Chinese interference in Australia's domestic affairs. Canberra's call last year for an inquiry into the origins of COVID-19 also infuriated Beijing, which took it as criticism of its handling of the virus. Disputes over Hong Kong's democracy movement and China's military ambitions in the South China Sea have also contributed to the tension. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison.
It is not surprising that Australian government officials would therefore not be going to China for those games. Australian athletes will, though. Australia's a great sporting nation. I very much separate the issues of sport and these other political issues, and I would like to see those issues resolved, but they are not resolved. Australia will not step back from the strong position we've had standing up for Australia's interests.
China has said that tensions in the bilateral relationship lie squarely on the Australian side. China is Australia's biggest trading partner. Political disputes in recent years have seen China impose tariffs and restrictions on a range of Australian imports, including coal, wine, barley, and lobsters. Caitlin Byrne is the director of the Griffith Asia Institute at Griffith University in Queensland. She says Australia's diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Winter Olympics could cause China to retaliate.
Will it achieve any significant outcome? Possibly not. And in fact, it does bring risks as well. China has already said, in response to the United States' statement of the diplomatic boycott and in response to Australia, that there will be countermeasures. And we are likely to see some kind of response. It's not clear what that will be.
Australia's diplomatic boycott follows a similar move earlier this week by the United States and Britain. On Thursday, Canada said it too wouldn't send officials to the Winter Olympics, which start February 4 in the Chinese capital. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Thanks, Phil. And VOA's Gwen Ooten will have more on the diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Games later in the show. In National Basketball Association action Wednesday night, 26 of the NBA's 30 teams were on the court. Among the winners, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Miami Heat, and the Houston Rockets. The Rockets are the hottest team in the NBA right now. The AP's Dave Ferry reports on Houston's victory, as well as the wins by Miami and Cleveland.
The Rockets have won seven straight since a 15-game skid after Eric Gordon delivered 21 points before his ejection in the fourth quarter of a 114-104 decision over the Nets. Garrison Matthews had 19 for Houston, four coming during a 5-0 spurt after Brooklyn trimmed a 17-point fourth-quarter deficit to four. Rockets center Christian Wood had 15 rebounds and says this was a statement win.
The Nets are, what, number one in the East, I believe. So this win feels really good, speaking on the teams that we played before and people saying we haven't really played anybody, even though they're missing Kevin Durant. I feel like this win felt good for us.
James Harden had 25 points for the Atlantic Division leading Nets on a night when NBA leading scorer Kevin Durant and LaMarcus Aldridge both sat out for rest. Caleb Martin hit 6 of 8 from downtown and scored a career-high 28 points as the Heat beat the Bucks 113-104.
I put a lot of work in. I shoot as much as anybody over the summer, so, you know, I feel like I'm just as deserving to get them up as anybody else. But when the opportunity comes, and it just feels good that guys want me to take those opportunities, so it obviously helps.
Kyle Lowry had 22 points and 13 assists for Miami, which drained 22 three-pointers. The Heat took the lead for good with 9 straight points in the final 55 seconds of the third quarter. Jrue Holiday scored 27 points, and Chris Middleton finished with 20 for the Bucks. Giannis Antetokounmpo had just 15 points as Miami limited him to 4 of 13 from the field. Darius Garland and rookie Evan Mobley carried the Cavaliers to a 115-92 thrashing of the Bulls. Garland had 24 points and 6 assists in Cleveland's fifth win in 7 games. Mobley shot 8 of 11 and finished with 16 points, 9 rebounds, and a season-high 5 blocks.
It's very fun. Every time we go up and we play like that, it's always fun playing with my guys, winning. It was just a fun game.
The Cavaliers took command in the third quarter when Kevin Love sank 3 three-pointers in a 157 span to extend their lead to 78-56. Zach LaVine scored 23 points and had 9 assists for Chicago, which had its 4-game winning streak snapped. The Bulls played their second straight game without leading scorer DeMar DeRozan due to COVID-19 protocol. I'm Dave Ferry.
Thanks, Dave. In Charlotte, North Carolina, Cameroonian basketball star Joel Embiid was praised by his coach after helping lead the Philadelphia 76ers to their 14th victory of the NBA season. The AP's Brett McMillan reports from Charlotte.
Philadelphia wore down the shorthanded Hornets for their third straight win, 110-106. The Sixers just an 8-point run with 3 minutes to go to get some breathing room. Joel Embiid scored 5 of his 32 in that run. Embiid is the guy that Doc Rivers knows they can go to with a game on the line.
He's a willing passer. He knows the spots that he needs to get to. He trusts the guys. You know, they trust him, too. You know, it's not easy sometimes for a team to keep going down to the box every time.
The Hornets, who have 5 players in the health protocol, had 4 play more than 40 minutes in this one, including Gordon Hayward, who led the way with a season-high 31. Brett McMillan, Charlotte.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. In Olympic news, Canada is the latest country to join its allies in a diplomatic boycott of the 2022 Winter Games in Beijing, China. VOA's Gwen Uten has the announcement from the Canadian Prime Minister and reaction from the International Olympic Committee president. Hey there, Gwen.
Hey there, Sonny. Canada joins the United States, Australia, and the UK as the countries that will not send government ministers or officials to the upcoming Beijing Olympic Games over human rights concerns in China. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau made the announcement on Wednesday and told reporters his country has joined the diplomatic boycott to send a message to the Chinese government.
As a country, indeed, as many partners around the world, we are extremely concerned by the repeated human rights violations by the Chinese government. That is why we are announcing today that we will not be sending any diplomatic representation to the Beijing Olympic Paralympic Games this winter. Our athletes have been training for years and are looking forward to compete at the highest level against athletes from around the world. And they will continue to have all of our fullest support as they show the extraordinary success that Canada has at Winter Olympic Games.
International Olympic Committee President Thomas Bach also addressed the media on Wednesday, but he would not comment on the growing number of countries that have joined the diplomatic boycott, saying that doing so would go against the IOC's mission of uniting the world during the Olympic Games. However, Bach emphasized that his silence should not be seen as taking sides.
By not commenting on political issues, you are not taking a side, neither the one nor the other. And this is, the mission of the IOC. Otherwise, we could not manage to accomplish the mission of the Games to bring and to unite the world, if we would start to take political sides on one way or the other, we would never get all the 205 or 206 National Olympic Committees to Olympic Games.
And Bach stressed that the Olympic Games are about and for the athletes, not governments.
The integrity of the Games are about the integrity of the sports competitions. Therefore, and we have our full focus, on the athletes. The Games are about and for the athletes. And therefore, you will hear the same comment from us for every political decision from any government. We have been concerned with the athletes. We welcome that they can participate, that they are supported by their national governments, and the rest is politics, and our political neutrality, the principle is applied.
The diplomatic boycott has not prevented athletes who represent the countries involved from participating in the upcoming Games. American and British athletes are still able to compete in Beijing, and both the Australian and Canadian Olympic committees have stated that the boycott does not affect their athletes. On Thursday, China dismissed Canada's decision to join the Olympic boycott as a, quote, farce, and Chinese officials are reportedly concerned that the move could spark a chain reaction. China's foreign ministry spokesman told reporters his country had not extended invitations to the U.S., the U.K., or Canada. And he says despite the absence of their delegations, China remains committed to hosting a safe and exciting Olympic Games. The Beijing Winter Olympics are set to begin in less than 2 months on February 4th, 2022. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Finally, Tiger Woods is returning to competitive golf for the first time since his February car crash, as we hear now from the AP's Ed Donahue.
Woods' right leg was badly injured in a car crash 10 months ago. There had been speculation of a return. He was spotted on a practice range during a tournament in the Bahamas last weekend. Woods announced he would compete next week with his 12-year-old son, Charlie, in the PNC Championship in Orlando, Florida. Woods had said last week he was a long way off in his recovery, dousing hopes of a return to the PGA Tour by suggesting his leg wouldn't allow him to practice as much. As for the PNC Championship, Tiger Woods says he's playing as a dad and couldn't be more excited and proud. I'm Ed Donahue.
And that wraps up the December 9th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.